Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, it's bring back the Glendenning medal and all the best, all the wrap up from a very busy couple of days at the tribunal.
That was out of bounds.
I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is...
Well, hello, listeners. Tuesday morning, it's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. I have sitting next to me Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian Quarters.
Duff.
If we had a sex scene and a car chase, I reckon we'd have everything in today's show.
The last 24 hours have been manic. What do you reckon, the Duff Quarters medal? Nice ring to it?
Well...
I've got to say, just from the out, mate.
The Oscar the Grouch medal, because they've trashed it.
Yeah, they have, mate. I'm not happy about the decision. I don't like it. To be honest, I think Freo might be a little paranoid about anything to do with the Eagles, because, look, a friend of mine, let's call him Dave from Dalkeith, he's a lawyer. Now, if we're talking about representation of the Freo faithful, he's rung me this morning. He has a pathological hatred of the Eagles, and he thinks it's a disgraceful decision, as do I. Ross Glendenning, I look at as a North Melbourne great who won a Brownlow at North, came and finished his career at the Eagles and played some great WA state footy. I look at Ross as a WA football great. I don't look at him. Yes, he's employed by the Eagles now. But I don't look at him and say, there's an Eagles lock. There's an Eagles person as such. I look at him as a WA football person. And I think out of all of this, I'm not sure how much. Look, it's just ill-conceived, because I just think out of it, Ross Glendenning's the one copping a whack over it. In my opinion, his reputation is. And yeah. I don't like it at all.
It demeans a grade of West Australian footy. It demeans the medal itself. Do you know of the 33 players to have been awarded this medal over the 16 years? Because, of course, there was one that was shared between, I think it was Mundy and Barlow.
Yep.
24 are either club champions, All-Australians, Brownlow medalists, Norm Smith medalists, or a combination of all of the above.
It means something, doesn't it, this medal?
Good,
it really
good
does.
Good players win this medal.
Yep.
And any award is shaped by the quality of player that wins it. And this is just... I know what Fremantle's thinking here. They're thinking that Ross Glendenning is West Coast's inaugural captain, and that Ross Glendenning now works at West Coast. This is a West Coast medal. But when this medal was struck, which is before the 2001 derbies, Ross Glendenning was at Fremantle, and he was one of very few people to, at that point in time, have had a foot in both camps. So this medal was forged with the best of intentions.
Absolutely,
at that time.
Absolutely it was, yes.
And now as things have turned out and as time has evolved, then you might be able to argue that Ross Glendenning is very much a West Coast person. But if you want to change, get on the front foot, take the high road, and go to West Coast and the West Australian Football Commission and say, we would like the name of our inaugural captain, Ben Allen, added to this medal. Or we would like the name of our greatest ever player, Matthew Pavlich, added to this medal.
I would have no problem with that. But why wasn't this done in January, February?
Correct.
It's been dropped on them the week of the derby.
Correct.
Or the derby. And it's just not right. I don't like the timing. I don't like anything about this.
And they've tried to hide behind commercial...
They reason. Have.
Which just makes it even worse.
Well, I get the trophy, okay? Trophy, that's fine. I get that. I'm neither here nor there on the trophy being handed out. It was a CUB sponsored trophy. That's fine. Yep. But the medal's not.
No.
And I'm just not sure why the West Australian Footy Commission can't come in over the top here. I know it's a Dockers home game, but so what? This is the Glendenning medal. This is bigger than a home game interest.
I'd go further. If the WA Football Commission is a toothless tiger, which when it comes to the AFL clubs, we know that it is.
Well, then the AFL come in over the top.
The AFL should come in over the top and say, this is demeaning.
Yes, it is demeaning.
It's demeaning to the game. It's demeaning to a great player in the game. It's demeaning to both of the clubs. Paul Hazelby, who is a Fremantle player who won this medal four times, is absolutely flabbergasted at this decision.
The Charles Brownlow medal is given to the best player in the AFL every year, Geelong administrator. Look at the Q Clash last week, the Marcus Ashcroft medal.
I mean, a Brisbane premiership great and an administrator at Gold Coast.
That's right. So, I mean, I think we're being a little bit precious about all of this, to be honest.
We are. And, you know, Fremantle has always been the little brother in the WA football market, and it's always been trying to find a way to get on even terms with West Coast. I understand that. Pick your battles, boys.
Yeah, this does not help.
This is not a battle you want to be fighting.
No. And they won't win this battle, mate.
And I say that as a Fremantle person. Pick your battles and try and assume the moral high ground on things. Don't take the low road.
Yep.
This is the low road. Not just the fact that you're trying to do it, but the way you've gone about it.
Do you see this being resolved this week? I see this as being reversed. I'll be surprised if this is not reversed.
Well, if I was the AFL, I'd be coming in over the top and saying, don't ruin the first derby at the new stadium by having something like this cast a shadow over it.
Mm.
You were thinking with your heads up your backsides when you did this, reverse the decision, reinstate the medal, and then if you feel like the medal needs to evolve into something different, work to change it.
Do you think Freo would have foresaw the anguish over this?
Well,
clearly not, unless they wanted it. I'm not sure.
Unless they've got eight Stevie Wonders on their board.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, foresight. How much foresight do you need to see this coming?
Not a lot. It's not their greatest day, not their greatest moment, Fremantle's, that's for sure.
And I just don't understand, you know, this is arguably the biggest game of footy this state has seen.
With both teams in cracking form, we're going to have a great game, we hope, on Sunday.
Yep.
And then this casts a pall over it. It's disgraceful.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And they tried to sneak this one under the guard, and how they thought they were going to do it,
I don't know.
It makes you wonder whether they're all asleep at the wheel down there.
Yep. Well,
it does. It's very, very poor.
Well, let's see what comes of it, Duff. Let's hope that it's reversed and we're all happy by next week.
Maybe there's a big sleep fest going on at the moment, because I suspect Michael Christian was asleep.
Well, yes. Yeah, I agree. I've got to agree. I'm not sure what message it sends out now with the bump. Look, Ryan Burton, I'm sure there was no intention to hurt.
Absolutely no
intent.
But
you know what? He's taken eight steps. He knew what was good. When you run 10 metres to bump someone, it's not incidental contact. You run the risk of some head trauma, and there was massive head trauma there. I'm stunned that he is not serving a penalty at the moment.
Well, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, they got it. Michael Christian started to get this wrong with Mark Lacroix.
Yep.
Ben Ainsworth was taken out of the game, the West Coast Gold Coast game. It was a bump. There was high contact. It might have been accidental, but Ben Ainsworth suffered a concussion, played no further part in the game, and Michael Christian deemed it an accident. There are no accidents in footy.
So can I ask this question, Duff? You're an AFL player this weekend. You're about four steps.
You're beauty.
playing with Carlton, mate. Sorry.
Oh, bugger.
You're four steps from a contest. What do you do? So the bump now is okay?
Clearly. Yeah, you have to put coaches in a position where they coach this out of their players.
Well, there was clearly an opportunity to tackle from Ryan Burton. There was an opportunity to tackle, and he chose not to. There was head trauma. You deserve a week or two. I'm not sure if he would have deserved any more than two. I would have been happy with a week, because I think it was unintentional, but it was very careless. I would be happy with a week for
that. So you know what they did? And this is exactly what they did. When they had the Lindsay Thomas incident with...
That's different, but...
Who did you take? Was that Kaczynski? That was Kaczynski.
Kaczynski.
Who did Lindsay Thomas knock out?
He's had a crack at a couple.
Yeah, well,
was it Joel Selwood in the past?
No, it was a bump off the ball where they deemed that it was a clash of heads and therefore an accident. They then corrected, and they decided that clash of heads means duty of care. You're responsible for the consequences. Then Nathan Fyfe bumps Michael Riscatelli.
Ineligible for the Brownlow.
They knock heads. Riscatelli is not hurt, but goes off the ground, gets stitches, comes back on. And they're swinging like a pendulum on this. They're going too far one way, then too far back the other way. There are common sense outs when people inadvertently bump and there's inadvertent contact and there are no consequences.
Yep, yep.
But when you bump and there are consequences, accidental or not...
And particularly when you run from 10 metres.
You've got to pay the price.
You do. And look, if you're Tom Mitchell incident, now he was being cleared with a fine. Now, Tom Mitchell, I wouldn't like to see him go for that. But if you're Jack Graham at Richmond.
You'd be asking how come he didn't go for that.
Why did you not go for that? I just don't get, there's no consistency there at all.
Yeah.
James Sicily deserves a week for being dumb. I mean, there was not really a lot of pressure put on, but that's the I don't like anyone standing on anyone when they're face down. Don't like it at all.
He might get two just to punctuate the point, because he's got some issues, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. This prize. And look, no one wants to see that. Give him 2 weeks, and it's not. And people think twice about doing it in future, and particularly himself might think twice about it doing it in future. The other thing at the weekend that confused me is this sliding in with the legs. Now, I get what it's for. I understand. I think they've overcooked the goose a bit with it now, though. I think it's gone too far the other way. Agree?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think the Luke Hodge one in the Q clash, which came at a critical time in the game, was... that was very borderline, because the ball was elsewhere and he was just prone on the ground going after the ball. And I think what we don't want is a player bending down to pick up the ball and a player sliding into him and basically crushing his legs underneath his
body. Of course, but aren't there degrees of it? I'm not sure. There was a Gunston one at the weekend too.
Look,
I'm not saying get rid of it. I'm saying perhaps it could be policed a little better.
I think what they want is players keeping their feet and not crashing into the bottom of people's legs, lest we end up with another Gary Rowan. So I don't have a problem with it. I don't even have a problem with rules if they're very prescriptive. And I think this is Michael Christian. This is the mess he's made for himself with the bump, is that treat it like the hands in the back rule. If there's high contact and a player is hurt, you go.
Like Shannon Hearn at the weekend.
Did
you see the hands in the back rule with Shannon Hearn?
The no hands in the back.
No hands in the back.
The sleight of hands in the back. That was one of the more remarkable umpiring decisions I've seen, I have to say.
Listen, a bit of breaking news too, Duff, this morning. Sydney has announced this week, game against Geelong, no Lance Franklin and no Hannabury. And John Longmire has said it's a fair assumption that the bruised heel he's been carrying is a legacy from the round one clash at Optus Stadium. He's talking about the surface, the hardness
hard
of
ground.
The surface.
Yeah.
So that's a big call 4 or 5 weeks out later.
Yes, and we wonder how the surface is going to be after the Nitro Circus there.
Well, I was there. I have no issue with the Nitro Circus being there. I was actually there. It was a pretty funny night, actually. But it didn't really. It was only a very small portion of the ground.
Right.
City side wing. That was that side. That's all. And it wasn't even the whole wing. But it was they had plenty of protective cover on the surface. But I have it's a taxpayer-funded stadium, not an AFL-funded stadium. And there are plenty of taxpayers out there who like the Nitro Circus. So I
agree with that. I also think you need to take care of your major tenant.
Yeah, you do.
And your major tenants are West Coast and Fremantle.
They took care of them. There's plenty of protection on that surface.
The ground is too hard quarters.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We've walked on it.
Yep.
We know it. We've walked on other AFL services. It's too hard. They can give whatever penetrometer readings they like, but the ground is too hard.
So it has to – look, it's not anything they're going to be able to really, really fix till the end of the season.
Well, it should have been fixed by now.
Mm. Well, you can aerate it, you can treat it, but you can't – you need to topsoil it, don't you? That's what you need to do.
The reality is, mate, this surface was not laid in 5 minutes before the start of the season. They were bedding this down towards the end of last year.
So I keep coming back to, is it a reflection of how long this ground was compacted? It was compacted for a hell of a long time. It is very hard underneath the
surface. Only thing that matters, quarters, is the 18 inches of topsoil on top. Now, if you've gotten the surface wrong, you've gotten those 18 inches wrong.
Yep.
So,
It's an issue. It is an issue now. When you've got the coach of Sydney coming out and saying 4 weeks after the game that our star is missing and it's a legacy of a bruised heel that he incurred in round one at that stadium, that's an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And the West Coast players, I'm told, are pulling up really, really sore after games. Mind you, a message to both clubs, if your players are getting sore, don't go back there to train every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is what they're doing. You know, and we put this to Adam Simpson last week, you know, maybe you need to train there less. Oh, well, the boys like to train there. Well, if they like to train there, expect to be sore.
Yep. That's fair.
Because Subiaco is softer.
A win at the G, not overly impressive, or was Carlton okay?
I thought Carlton was okay. I thought we expected a response from Carlton. I didn't think West Coast were great. I think there's a tipping point with West Coast where they get too slow.
Yep.
And they were close to that tipping point on the weekend. Their forward line was tall. You change the mix in the midfield a bit because Daniel Venables gets hurt, so you bring in another player, not necessarily a quick player. You're playing now three tall forwards plus a resting ruckman often in the forward line.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if they address that balance this week because they're coming up against a very, very quick rebounding defence.
So Gaff's in really good form, isn't he? So does Bailey Banfield go to him this week? And if he does, and Gaff has another form game, does he get six votes? Because he is the form tagger of the competition.
Well, my question there would be, do you think Bailey Banfield can get Luke Shuey? If you think Banfield can get Luke Shuey, as in nut him and take him out as an influence in the game, I would be sending Banfield to Shuey. If you don't think that, I'd send him to the one you can get.
Right now, you'd have Shuey ahead of Gaff?
Shuey, I think, is West Coast's...
not disagreeing.
Nick Natanui aside, I think Shuey is the key to West Coast.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with that, but I think at the moment, I think he's just in rare form, Gaff, that's all. He has been, if you picked an All-Australian side now and you had a tagger in there, I mean, Ben Jacobs is in the conversation, but he's in there, Banfield, I reckon. He's in that side if you're picking a team with a tagger in it.
Well, he's been an outstanding...
He's got about four or five big sculpts.
Yeah, he's been an outstanding player in his first year.
And everyone he's got has been playing good footy.
Yeah.
So well done to the Dockers.
Ross Lyon, though, does identify the guy you can get and the guy you can make a big dent on the other team.
So you reckon Shuey's more gettable?
No. I would be, if I was Ross Lyon, I would be asking the question, if I send Bailey Banfield to Shuey, can he get him?
Yeah.
Because if he sends him to Gaff, he probably can get him.
Yeah, gee, on the evidence of this season, I reckon he can get whoever he goes on.
Very strong contributor, very strong in the mind, I think.
Shuey might wake up on Sunday morning, open his box of cornflakes, and there's Bailey Banfield standing. I reckon. Look, impressive effort from both sides at the weekend, so I think we might have ourselves a bit of a derby this weekend.
Yeah, I really hope so. I think we've had... we had that period, didn't we, between 2002 and 2007 where we were really spoilt during the derby rivalry because... both teams were around about the same position in terms of their status in the AFL, and they played really, really great matches. And that was when the really memorable derbies occurred, most of them. Since then, while both clubs were strong sort of 11 and 12, you've always had a period where one club's been strong and the other club hasn't been. Obviously, the last five, West Coast have won, so Fremantle would consider themselves...
It's pretty close now, overdue. The swing, isn't it? It's pretty close...
As in the head-to-head?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
West Coast are ahead. So Fremantle got pretty close to squaring it up, and then West Coast have won five in a row, so they've edged clear again. But, Fremantle will feel like they're due, and it's their home game, it's their home crowd. I'm still going to tip West Coast at this stage.
So am I. I am the only thing, you know, there's one player who may sway me the other way, and that's Fife. Because he is playing, everyone's saying, and they're right, he's playing with the Brownlow form now. But it's the way he's doing it. He, in that Brownlow year, he would move through stoppages, powerfully move through stoppages, and he's doing that again. He's running away from the stoppage and no one can catch him. That's the sort of strength he adds that not a lot of players can match. Who goes to Fife this week?
Well, I think that, you know, if Ross Lyon's considering where does Bailey Banfield go if he gives him a tagging role... Adam Simpson has a massive, massive decision on what to do about Fife. Because you could argue that Simo is quite an aggressive coach. He's reluctant to tag, which has marginalised Mark Hutchings in the team, I think, because that's his primary role.
Maybe he stays in this week as a plan B.
He won't go to Fife.
Yeah.
If they decide on a run with Fife, it'll be Elliot Yeo, who's done a good job in the past. I just wonder whether Yeo has ever played on Fife with Fife in this kind of mood.
He's in a very angry mood when it comes to getting the footy and doing something.
I would argue he's a more effective player than he was in 2015. Yep. And you know why? He's quicker to release the ball. I think there was a moment in 2015, it was in about round two at Geelong, and he stepped through four Geelong tacklers and kicked a goal. And I think that led him to believe he couldn't be tackled. And he took on tacklers after that. And in the end, they were sending one, two and three players to tackle Fife in the belief he wouldn't release the ball, that he would try and beat the tackle. Since his broken leg, he's had to learn to play within limitations, physical limitations. And I think as a result of those physical limitations, he gets rid of the ball and he brings teammates into it. He's not only a dynamic player and a powerful player, which he has always been, he's now a more constructive player and a more inclusive player for teammates. I would argue he's a better player now than he was in 2015.
So Tabana out, which is most unfortunate for Tabana, was playing some good footy, and not only over the course of the season, was playing some good footy in the lead up to his injury.
Yeah.
He's out, which means there might be a bit of movement there in the back line. Michael Johnson, I think, comes back in this week.
Johnson comes back in, and it just becomes a matter of how...
Because Pierce will have to spend some time in the ruck, I assume.
Geez, do you really want Alex Pierce with Nick Natanui's knee resting on his chest?
No, I don't.
Times a game?
No, I don't.
I wouldn't. I'd be... It's a big decision for Ross, and it's a difficult decision. You know, they would have loved Matt Tabana the way he was playing. He took 5 marks in 20 minutes the other day. He was in super nick, and it's a damn shame that he's gone.
It is.
But I'd be tempted to bring in a ruckman. You know, against any other team, I'd be thinking we can get away with maybe, you know, fudging it with Alex Pierce coming into the ruck, or, you know, one of the forwards coming up the ground, something like that. But against Nick Natanui and Scott Lysette, yep, both genuine
ruckmen.
That's
ruckman, a good call.
I don't want Alex Pierce.
So who comes in? Does the Meek inherit the earth finally?
I think the Meek might inherit the earth. Quarters.
Nice. Stop it, you're teasing me with that.
You'll have that one ready to go on the template for Sunday.
It's already there, mate. Look, a couple of other things over the round. Sydney, starting to show a bit of wear and tear. Obviously, we've just heard
midfield,
the midfield's struggling a little bit. Age, you know, shall weary them in this instance. I mean, it really shall. And, you know, a few worrying signs there for John Longmire, I think. And perhaps they would be looking at a decision they made a couple of years ago with Tommy Mitchell. And saying, ooh, he'd be handy now. They've been great warriors, the Sydney midfield. You know, I'm talking of, you know, Kennedy, Hanbury, these types, Luke Parker. Probably Luke Parker's got a little bit of life left in him yet, as have the others. But, yeah, it's worrying signs there. I saw this as their last chance, I must say, to win a flag, and I'm still not jumping off them at all. But just right at the moment, worrying signs so early in the year.
You don't see many games where their midfield are collectively poor, do you?
And you don't see them lose contested possession that often, and it's been happening more and more often.
So the flip side of that is what a great win by Adelaide, and what a great response by Taylor Walker.
It was, but again, Taylor Walker... he needs the media, it seems, to provoke a response. I'd like to see him back it up now.
Yep.
He's too often, he has these great responses, then fails to back it up, then it goes missing. And I want to see a good solid vein of form from Taylor Walker before I'm convinced otherwise. Daniel, did you see Talia's comments? Very interesting too, about Doty, who he has slotted in.
Better than Lever?
Yes, we're not missing Jake too much. That was a bit of one across the bow, that was.
This is a bit of a nan-nan-nan-nan, wasn't it, really?
He has been good, Doty, though. I mean, he's been very good to fill that role.
Yeah, well, there's a saying in AFL footy quarters, there's how well you can play and how often you can play well. Let's see how often he can play well before we start putting him above Jake Lever.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that. It's been a good start. And on to the Q clash and Zorko, not the great.
Almost the game of the weekend, I reckon.
I reckon it was the game of the weekend. What a cracking finish.
The last 15 minutes, that's what makes footy great.
And there was no score.
When there was bodies flying everywhere.
And no score.
I know. You know, I mean, it was phenomenal, wasn't it?
I watched it on replay and I had it. You know, when you go to the end of the game and you want to watch the last quarter again, and I'm rewinding it and thinking, that scoreboard hasn't moved.
You know,
it's terrific.
So you often barrack for your tip, don't you? When you're in a neutral game like that. So I'm sitting there watching it, and Tom Lynch gets it was a mark or free kick.
Do you pick Gold Coast?
I pick Gold Coast.
So did I.
So I'm on the coasters,
and I was barracking for the tip.
So Tommy Lynch is going back, and I'm thinking, okay, I want him to kick this goal because this finishes the game.
Yeah.
But then there's a part of me thinking, if he misses this, we're going to have a hell of a last minute here.
Yeah. And even when it comes down to Rayner, and I'm not blaming him, but had the opportunity to win it, could have passed off. So there were so many elements to that finish. I didn't really like the Tuke Miller-Zorko stuff. Now, if you look at the replay, I'm talking about him not shaking his hand after the game.
But he kind of acknowledges him after.
No, he did. He did. He sort of gave him a little tap and said, look, yeah, sorry, mate. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But then I didn't really like Miller coming out after that and saying, you know, oh, played on it. Let it go for a bit too long. I thought I would rather just see that go.
Yeah. Look, I think one thing we do in the media is that when a person mentions a word like sportsmanship,
yep.
that becomes the key word in it. I mean, Miller was half shrugging it off and sort of going, oh, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
Mm.
But he mentions the word sportsmanship. And,
yeah,
and
I didn't like that.
And that becomes the focus of it all. Probably what Dane Zorko should have done, and he's acknowledged he was wrong. And that if he had his time again, he'd do it differently. He probably should have turned around and gone after him and said, sorry, mate, I'm just a bit hot under the collar.
Now, a bit of credit where it's due to you, Duff. I reckon about 4 weeks ago we were talking about Geelong's defence and how it was leaking a lot of goals and you were demanding Blue Sabres goes back.
Yep.
And he has gone back. And they are now conceding an average of about 60 points a game. So they've been a very different-looking defence. So well done.
And when Port messes up, it's because of a massive disconnect between their midfield and their forwards.
Yep.
Why isn't Travis Boak midfield more?
I agree. They've got him sort of playing a half forward, haven't they?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's a big body. He plays the midfield role well. I don't know why he's not there. Is he carrying an injury? Is his tank not there? I'm not sure. He should be in the middle.
And, of course, the other tribunal thing to come out of that was the Lindsay Thomas hit on Scott Selwood.
You know, they've appealed that. I'm not sure. Have they yet, the Joel Selwood retort?
Yeah, I think they should.
I hope they do because I want him to get off.
Yeah, I think they should. It's different to the incident on Papley the week before.
Yep.
Where Lachie Hunter got a week and he pushes down on his face,
yep.
and Papley is clearly affected by that and lays on the ground
he
holding
sort of
his
missed
face
it, didn't
while.
He? It didn't really get him.
I think he grabs him by the scruff of the neck and he pushes either side of the face.
Yep.
And yes, his fists are clenched and it's a firm pushing down moment, and I've got no doubt he was hoping to give him a chin massage on the way down, but he doesn't smash him.
I reckon he
in
showed a fair bit of restraint, given that it was his brother he was flying the flag for. I would have given him one myself. I would have copped a couple of weeks if it was me, I think.
So this is this one at the tribunal's a no-brainer, isn't it?
I think so.
He runs past the ball, he changes direction, he elects to bump, and he hits him high.
And what are we talking? Three?
He gets three from me.
Yeah.
I think minimum three.
So he gets three, so he gets four, because he's already got a week. So he's got 4 weeks.
He's got some form, I would say.
So he got a week for the other incident. So he gets three for this one, so he misses 4 weeks. That was his first game back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
yeah, well
and
done.
And he kicked a really nice goal, and he offered...
Well, I hope he remembers it, because it'll be in his memory for a while.
It'll be the thing that keeps him going.
The other thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is North Melbourne's great performance against Hawthorn.
Yes. I want to give your boys a clip here.
Yep.
They don't play well at Etihad Stadium.
No, never have. Never have. And I was concerned about this game. I didn't think the Puopolo Rioli exit would have that much pressure, on our forward line pressure. It really did make a difference. And, you know, they've got some headaches, the Hawks. Look very slow. They don't play the ground well, you're right. Never liked playing. They're always worried going into those games. Great effort by North, though.
Is that because it's small and they can't spread opposition teams out and kick through the pressure?
I think so. You know, but I will say one thing. Good comeback. Great comeback in that third quarter, but what a terrific first quarter from North. And how good is Ben Brown going at the moment?
He's a superstar. Mm. And the other guy we should give an accolade to.
Should have been the All-Australian full forward last year.
Yeah. I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah.
The other guy we should give an accolade to is Brad Scott.
Absolutely.
He is a coach that flies under the radar when we talk about the best coaches in the
game. Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
He's done a very good job with North. A lot of us had them in our bottom fours at the start of the year. Now, I suspect wherever North ends up, and I seriously doubt they'll end up in the top four.
I do too. I still haven't got them in the eight.
Yeah, but they won't be bottom four now.
No, they'll be somewhere outside the eight, but they'll be, you know, eighth to sort of ninth to about 13th, but they're not going to be bottom four. Absolutely not. He's really regenerated that list beautifully.
And other guys they've got who sneakily become elite quarters, Robbie Tarrant in defence.
Yeah.
He's now a super defender.
Yeah.
Majak Dore is actually
isn't he?
He's actually able to play in defence because he's alongside Robbie Tarrant and Scotty Thompson, who are both very, very good players.
Yeah.
And the other one is Jack Zeeble as a forward.
Yeah, going forward. I'm not sure if they will, and I don't think Brad Scott's convinced he'll stay there, but at the moment it's working really, really well, and you wouldn't mix it up at all at the moment.
No, fantastic effort by him.
And the other, only other one we is the draw.
Yes, they were lucky to get out of that, the Giants.
They were misused. The footy, a couple of teams misused, you know, inaccurate. Actually, that's the other thing we should talk about is not only inaccuracy in front of goals, which still baffles me.
Just skill.
But the skill. There's a lot of poor kicking this year, a lot more than normal.
The game, this is my theory on this, I think the skill level of the modern-day player is far and away above the skill level of the yesteryear player. But they are so heavily fatigued at times during games. A lot of the errors, the blatant skill errors that you see, are just flat-out fatigue errors. They're too tired to execute the skill
properly. You know, there's a really interesting point made by Paul Roos over the weekend, and that was that everyone argues, why aren't these players spending more time in front of goal? He said, we haven't got time. We have the real elite full forwards will find time, but because they're not full-time footballers, they're away from the club a lot.
So he was having a go at the Players Association.
He was.
For all the downtime and days off and that AFLPA's been able to...
He was saying we need more time with our players to teach them how to kick properly.
Yep.
Which is really amazing because you would think it's a given. You land an AFL club, you can kick.
Yeah.
But a lot of them aren't that developed.
And the point he made was that if you had all that time off and you're still getting paid $300,000 a year, that'd be a pretty good job to apply for, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'll have it.
Mind you, I don't really want to stand in the hole in front of a charging Lance Franklin.
No, well, you know, my theory, mate, I would have played 300, but for these small hands. It cost me 300 games, you know.
Oh, there you go. Okay, let's do some tipping. Of course, we've got the Anzac Eve game tonight between Richmond and Melbourne, which is fast becoming an absolute landmark event on the AFL calendar. Are you staying with the Tigers?
I'm staying with the Tigers. I want to see a response from Melbourne. I'm pretty sure I'll get one. Oh, they're -2 in the coach's box, Melbourne, too. Did you see that? Jack Viney, because he barracks too loud.
And Brendan McCartney's been banished.
He's been banished to the boundary line and not happy about it either.
Do you reckon he might have told Simon Goodwin he's getting his pants pulled down by Alistair Clarkson?
I think he might have. And apparently Jack Viney's barracking too loud in the box too. Bless him. That's good. I like a bit of passion.
They'd love him on the field, wouldn't they?
Oh, they would. I want to see a response from Melbourne, but I just think the Tigers are going along beautifully at the moment. Big occasion too.
And if 12 months ago, you can't imagine we'd have gotten to this point, but we've gotten to a point where we trust Richmond.
Yeah, we do.
And we don't trust Melbourne.
I do trust Richmond, definitely. And the other game, I haven't changed my tip with that one either. Collingwood v Essendon.
You are.
Look, I'm picking Collingwood. Yeah. The only thing, as I said last week, the only thing that bothers me is a 12-day break. It's too long. It really does concern me. It'll help them the other end because they got 4 days before they play Richmond. But that's the only thing that concerns me about Collingwood, whether that leaves them a bit flat. But I still trust them. I think they're one of the form teams of the competition at the moment. And I think Essendon is flaky.
Yeah, I'm a bit the same. I think this one's a genuine 50-50 game. And I'm not entirely sure what to expect from either team. But I have a little bit more belief in Collingwood at this stage than I do in Essendon.
And if anyone's got a little bit of coin they want to invest and they're prepared to pick Collingwood, get on side bottom from the Anzac Day medal because he's a big occasion player.
All right. That's all from Duff and Quarters. We're campaigning for the return of the Glendinning medal.
Bring it back.
I'm sure Tab Touch, our sponsors, will agree with us because it'll be something for the punters to punt on if it is up and going again.
Yep.
We will talk to you again later in the week for more tips, including all the latest news and the possible ins and outs from the Derby. We will see you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, powered by the West Australian and Perth Now.